Talk given Saturday, 23rd September 1972. If there is right consideration with respect to deep things, then there is true seeing. There is enlightenment. And it would be worth our while to consider together certain statements and teachings which have been made in the great religions and by the great mystics of the world. In the Brahmanical teachings, we have this statement that Parabrahman and Mula Prakruti are identical. To translate them into English, that the Absolute Consciousness and primordial nature are an identity. We have a statement like this by Eckhart: man truly is God. God truly is man. We have Jesus saying, the kingdom of heaven is within you. Some people translate it this way, the kingdom of heaven is amongst you. The Buddha said, look within, thou art Buddha. What is the fundamental significance of such statements? The statements as they stand are statements about the transcendent reality. They represent the transcendent answer to man in his wholeness, to man as far as all his conditions, his problems, his insights, etc. are concerned. And it is very important for us to appreciate the fact that the great teachers have always answered every question or responded to every situation in the world only in terms of transcendence. They did not give any political or economic or philosophic, in the sense of strictly intellectualist and metaphysical answers and so forth. They did not propound schemes. They gave the transcendent answer to man. And a very important point which mankind as a whole through the ages has failed to appreciate in this connection is that this transcendent answer is the only truly practical, the truly practical and practicable answer. Let us consider for a moment why this is so. Our problems, our sorrows, our difficulties, our temporary elations and passing enjoyments and all the rest of it take place only in a limited context. They are all ephemeral. They come into being, they express themselves, and they pass away. Birth, a little flutter, and then death. All these belong to the temporal, the spatio-temporal context of mortality. And the spatio-temporal context of mortality is the external appearance of that which is transcendent, indefinable, unanalyzable, not to be split up. You and I, as mortal beings, are just one manifestation of this tremendous cosmos, this universe of appearance. In order to understand appearance in intellectual terms, India presented the idea of prakriti, form or nature, form in the sense of an informing principle at work, or primordial nature. And Parabrahman as the absolute, ultimate reality. The two words are used not to imply two aspects or two duals, but purely for the convenience of speech, which means the convenience of thought. And India made this tremendous statement that the two are identical. The split between them is in our consciousness. We, as individuals, belong to the context of the limited, the finite, the mortal. We are part of the appearance. But call it Mula Prakriti or call it Parabrahman, whatever the name you use, the reality is only one. In us, in whom consciousness is only discriminative consciousness as yet, and has not flowered out into pure transcendent awareness, in us there is disturbance, conflict, and so on. There is lack of understanding. There is lack of understanding not because of shortness of intellect, but because of incomplete awareness. There isn't a whole awareness, a pure awareness. Because there is this discriminative consciousness, this split awareness, which separates out things constantly, we set up values whose tendency generally is to perpetuate the separation instead of releasing harmony. Discriminative consciousness is necessary for our continued daily existence. That is all. But this discriminative consciousness has to undergo transformation into pure awareness, a transcendent awareness, which will not dismiss discriminative consciousness, but into which discriminative consciousness becomes completely subsumed, so that the life of the organism as such can go on without coming to harm. Such as if you want to walk down the street, you must discriminate between the people, the buses, and so forth on the road. Otherwise, there'd be a collision, there'd be harm. But this transcendent awareness includes this discriminative consciousness and remains transcendent, which means that it remains not outside, not other than, but as the basic, all-inclusive ground which takes in the wholeness. It is important to understand this. Because as long as this basic wholeness is not actively functioning in us, we approach every problem fragmentarily, every situation fragmentarily. We abstract the particular situation out of the totality of the world process, and we look at it with a fragmented mind. So there is a double fragmentariness which has taken place. This seems to me to be the root source of human incapacity to release true resolution of all in all disharmonious situations. Consider how we react when we are in a troubled state of mind, because of some external stimulus or other, or maybe some internal stimulus, some memory or whatever it is. How do we react to it? If it is troublesome, we immediately want to get rid of it. We either get fearful because it is something which we don't know how to deal with, or we get angry. We react with violence and so forth. In every case, this is a fragmentary process. What we are trying to do is to replace something which we see fragmentarily and which is troublesome to us with another shape of things which would be more desirable to us. But that other shape of things, which is the more desirable or the more agreeable, is also only a fragment. Of course, there is the fact that there are limited, finite entities, situations everywhere. But the fragmentariness comes in this way, that in our awareness, there is no relationship of which we are conscious between this particular situation and the totality. It is the loss of vision and of understanding of the totality which brings about new troubles. If we could maintain that inner poise, that upekkha, in which there is no self-center, that inner poise in which in the infinite is able to function unobstructedly through the finite, which is me, myself. If we had that, then there is little chance, if any, of our approaching any situation, any problem, fragmentarily. Our approach would be a whole approach. And this is the healing approach. Wholeness, healing, holiness. They are all of a piece with each other. Now, this is the basic thing. If this basic thing is there, this unnecessary sorrow and suffering which afflicts living creatures would drop off. It would drop off never to return with our lack of wholeness as a predisposing cause. Pain and difficulty could come from outside because of, say, some natural calamity. Well, of course, it is there. Or if you catch a germ and the body undergoes pain and so forth. Yes, it is there. But if this inner wholeness is present, then my task as a human being is a complete and a perfect task. And in that sense, Eckhart's statement, man verily is God, is a simple fact. Look within, thou art Buddha. Thou art the enlightened one, the perfected holy one. You see, the whole task is in this complete transformation of awareness. When, as and when there is this transformation of awareness, the whole psychophysical being through whom that awareness functions is transmuted. The very body, the body itself, functions in various ways which under scientific examination prove to be different from the ordinary living body. Science is today entering into this field of research more and more, and it is making quite startling discoveries. Think in this connection of that statement in the golden verses of Pythagoras. And when thou dost approach and enter into the pure ether, then thou shalt be an immortal God. The statement is a little bit too personalistic. One thinks of Achilles, the son of Peleus, becoming an immortal god or something like that. But you know, you understand what it means. The approach to the pure ether means that this awareness is completely transformed. There is no limitation upon it. And therefore, in that state of holy awareness, pure awareness, whatsoever happens in the becoming process, whatsoever appearance there is, pleasant, unpleasant, etc., all that is resolved in the right way. And that right way must never be defined by us. It must never be mistaken to be we must never make the mistake of thinking that that rightness will take the shape that we thought of or desired. See, when my personal desire is out of the picture, whatsoever shape is there, if my awareness is whole awareness, then that shape is right for me. The shape will of course change. And it will change in a way which spells not bondage, but release, freedom, both for me and for those who are associated with me in that situation. So you see why the Holy Ones always gave the transcendent answer to any and every situation. Mula Prakruti and Parabrahman are identical. Man verily is God, God verily is man. The kingdom of heaven is within you. Look within, thou art Buddha, and so on. Now I am mentioning this, these things today, as a sort of a continuation of what we were considering last time. Remember, we considered this matter of violence in the world. And just a few days before our last meeting on that fateful Tuesday, that terrible tragedy at Munich, the Olympic Games occurred. We all seek ways and means to scotch violence, to solve the problem, and so forth. But the ways and means that I, as the imperfect, confused, man in bondage to my desires, to my little ideas and views and so forth, the ways and means that I devise contain within themselves, always contain within themselves, the seeds of future conflict, of future, of further confusion, and so forth. This is why it becomes so imperatively necessary for oneself to become purified. Transcendentally purified. So that one's spontaneous natural ethic in everyday life is a transcendental ethic and not a relative ethic as an individual. it is easy enough to give our intellectual assent to such statements. But that is not enough. We must feel it so sensitively, intensely in the sense of sensitively. We must feel it so intensely, sensitively, that the intellectual perception which externalizes what we perceive becomes internal to us. And there is a true seeing. That true seeing means that we have become that which we see. Sri Krishna, Jesus, both of them make the same sort of statements. I am the way, the truth, the life. I have become that. The Buddha said of himself, the Tathagata is the Dhamma become. He has become the way. The Dhamma is the way, the teaching, the truth, the doctrine. Use what word you like. He says the Tathagata is the Brahma become. And the word Brahma stands for the absolute all. You see, our task, the nature of the religious life, at the very root, or if you like to put it in the other form, at the very heart of the religious life, is my mode of awareness. In which way am I aware? Am I aware only discriminatively? Because if I am aware only discriminatively, I am aware of this existence in terms of a self and a not-self. And as long as I am aware in terms of a self and a not-self, there is no possibility of resolution into true harmony. None. It is the permanent living source of conflict between the duals, self and not self. You see, people sometimes feel a bit impatient and they say, yes, yes, this is all very fine, high philosophy and so forth. And they start saying, some people may understand it, but the bulk of people, what's the use of it to them? Never mind the bulk of people. I am the bulk. And some of us are indeed bulky. But putting that aside, see, if you or I as an individual, if you are really concerned with religion, and the religious life, which will mean fundamentally becoming the empty, transparent, unresisting psychophysical vehicle for the inflow and outflow of transcendence. If we are really concerned with religion that way, then this is it. Am I trying to foist a newfangled idea on you? Look at all the scriptures. All the scriptures of the old world. Look today in modern times at the sort of thing that one like Krishnamurti says. People often say, now Krishnamurti says something which is so simple, I can understand it. It touches me and it sort of shows me a way to solve my problems and so forth. But wait a minute. Look at the reason why I have responded to that simple statement like that. Shows me a way to get free of my pains and difficulties and troubles. That precisely is not what Krishnamurti really is trying to put before us. Don't forget one little statement, for instance, which comes in the commentaries on living. You are as nothing. Has nothing got any problems of its own? You see? Nothing has no problems of its own. He also says, you are the world. The world problem is the individual problem. The world problem is my problem. This is to put it in dualistic terms. But if we put it in terms of a statement which is a whole statement, we see that there is the problem. There is this tremendous problem of violence, of fear, suspicion, envy, jealousy, hate, even more terribly than those problems, the problem of pleasure lust, the problem of self-indulgence. So that the message which he gives, just like any of the other great teachers of the past, is the message which is calculated towards releasing us from this selfness, this self-center, I and me and mine and my problems, which means our release, our individual release from that root of conflict in our inner aware, in our inner consciousness, which is a discriminative consciousness, which raises up self and not self. That's what it comes to, always. The self and the not self. So you see, consider this thing very, very seriously, calmly. Remain in the state of constant consideration. Not a flabile activity of the intellect. Not a self-excusing indulgence by discursive thought. Not that sort of activity. But perfectly calmly, in poise, an intense, sensitive activity to remain awake to the reality of the whole situation. And if we see the whole situation, all the time, in its wholeness, you will discover that there is no I involved in it. There is no you involved in it. Thousands of people are able to suppress the I and work with the you or several yous, the society or the community, as the source of their energy drive. But this is only an identification of self with the other self. It's a subtle form of selfness. There is a separation. I'm thinking only of my children's good, of the good of the group members, of my friends, of Britain, and all that sort of thing. This is only a self-identification. Oh no. Good is the total good. That's all. The good of all existence. And I don't have to think about it. And in fact, I cannot think about it. I'm not such a mighty brain after all. One must have a sense of balance and a sense of humor and laugh at oneself. But if one is in the state of considerateness, in the state which is open-minded, deeply sensitive, awake, then the right thing happens through the individual being. Because remember, as we have seen again and again, it is totality which functions. The total universe is active. The total universe is living every split second. I, being a limited creature with very limited perception, cannot see the totality of the universe living and acting, but I see little bits living and acting here and there. That is my drawback. And because of that, conditioned by that, imprisoned by that, I see, I understand, I act not in terms of wholeness, of holiness, of well-being, of health, but in terms of separation and isolation, which means injecting those psychical forces into the world which lead to conflict and disharmony. This whole awareness is transcendent love. Erase from the tablets of the mind all that one has mistakenly written down on them as love, as the definition of love. All that is false. This whole consciousness, which cannot be written about, or spoken about, or thought about, or imagined, this whole consciousness is this transcendent energy, which we, for lack of other words, at least I, for lack of other words, call transcendent love. I would equally, and I do equally, call it transcendent wisdom, goodness, beauty, anything you like. All these words are analytical words because they separate out things. We use the dictionary meaning. Beauty means something different from wisdom. Then we find relationships between the beautiful and the wise. That is another matter. But fundamentally, different words mean different things, which means that we are aware in terms of separation. But when all that is transcended, we are through all that, and we really see. In fact, it is not that we really see, but the totality sees through us unhindered. Then, man verily is God, as Eckhart said. And God verily is man. Now there is no problem of violence. What we commonly call violent things will of course occur. But for you or for me, it is no longer a problem. It is no longer something which I have not understood. It is no longer something from which I cut myself off, of which I am fearful, or in relation to which, because of my egoism and vanity and conceit, I go for it right, left and center in order to solve it in my silly little way. You see the difference? And it is not easy, to put it mildly, to realize, to allow this state of divinity, if you like, this state of Tathagatahood, emerge freely and unhindered through us as we are. Back we come to the simple moralities. In the world of appearance, and we as manifested beings, psychophysical organisms, are in the world of appearance. For us as we are as psychophysical beings, the whole discipline lies in the purification, the sealers, the moralities, the simple commandments, if you like, coupled with that supreme instrument of salvation which we possess, the power of attentiveness. Because without that, the moralities cannot grow. It is the attentiveness which enables the seeds of good, which are all in our own psyche, to come to flower. And in their coming to flower, unlike the analogy with the meadow, which you may cultivate, the weeds are not rooted out and destroyed, but they all get transformed into virtues. This is the marvel of it all. Because the psyche is a well of energy. And it is not as if you can catch a little bit of the energy here or a little bit of the energy there, wash it, clean it, dry it, hang it up on the clothesline, bring it out, iron it, and then display it. Oh, lovely virtue. It's not like that. The whole psyche acts wholly all the time. The entire psyche is frightened, or the entire psyche is confused, feels kind, or feels elated, feels warm, feels generous, and all the rest of it. It's a whole action. And it is this wholeness of our own psyche which is the link between the wholeness of the total universe and the limited, finite separateness of the manifested organism. You see, aren't we marvelously made? Aren't we also fearfully made? The wonder and the beauty of existence. And when this which is made has become pure and whole and complete, has become holy, where is the separation between this, the limited finite mortal, and that, the inexhaustible, infinite, immortal, the transcendent? And it seems to me that this sort of thing lies at the very heart of religion, the understanding of religion, and the living of the religious life.